Hey, y'all, welcome back to the Don't Mom Alone podcast. I'm your host, Heather McFadden, and this is the place where I get to walk alongside you and connect you with people and resources so you know that you don't mom alone. In this episode number 586, I'm welcoming to the show Dr. Allison Cook.
I think my generation and the moms listening who are younger than me kind of like, oh golly, we can't do this to our kids. We have to be so perfectly present, and it's so much pressure. And just my own journey, again, not to underestimate the profound influence of a relationship, of a parent. It is so important. And also, it is not the ultimate source. It is not. God is the ultimate source of connection.
Dr. Allison is a psychotherapist and educator who has spent over 20 years helping people make sense of what feels hard and to move through it with care. She believes that growth doesn't happen through pressure or perfection, but through compassion, curiosity, and steady connection. What if your loneliness, anxiety, or overwhelm are not problems to fix, but invitations to pay attention to what your soul needs? Dr. Allison is joining me today to discuss her book, The Secure Soul, and talk about how attachment principles can deepen our connection with ourselves, others, and God. She explains how past wounds and younger parts of ourselves can surface through feelings of rejection, resentment, or a belief that we do not belong. And instead of responding with shame or blame, Allison encourages us to meet these emotions with curiosity, compassion, and healthy containment. You will learn the simple practice of recognize and return. Recognize what's happening inside of you, then return to the truth. I am loved even here. Allison also shares how tending to your own soul can help you move from reacting out of overwhelm to responding with greater wisdom and love. If you've spent years caring for everyone else while ignoring your own needs, this conversation is a beautiful reminder that your soul is worth tending to. It's a fantastic conversation. Let's get right to it. Here we go. Dr. Allison, welcome to the Don't Mom Alone podcast.
I am so thrilled to be here with you today. Thanks for having me.
And we were talking about, I'm like, why is it taking me so long to get you on the show? I've seen your work. I'm so impressed. I love everything you're doing and just thrilled to get to share you with everyone today. So thanks for joining me. Finally, goodness gracious. But we're going to talk about your new book, The Secure Soul. And I have to tell you, and I've kind of already gushed, but I've read books on attachment. This is nothing like any book I've ever read. Mm-hmm. And I think what was really refreshing is it's a great combination of a spiritual memoir intertwined with psychological knowledge and information. And so you start off the whole book with this confession, and I'm going to quote it because people haven't read the book yet. It says, "A part of me doesn't like God very much." I think it's awesome. I've been in the Christian world for a long time, so I appreciate the honesty of that. But not a lot of Christian authors would say that. So kind of take us back and maybe even paint a picture. I know it's in the context of a prayer walk you took in London, but what was kind of happening inside of you? Maybe you might need to bring up internal family system language for people so they understand that part of me piece of the phrase, but what was going on?
Yeah, the part of me is very key. So for those who are new to my work, stick with me. because that's the life-changing magic of parts, I think, of parts work is recognizing it's not all of who we are. And I think I even say shortly thereafter, 90% of me really likes God, but there is this part of me. My husband and I, and the irony is we were on a prayer walk. My husband is a very disciplined, every night takes his prayer walk. I'm a little more the spiritual, I have my disciplines, but they're less structured than his. And so he had invited me and we were on this walk, and this part of me did not want to pray. I was like, I want to be here in London. I want to be looking at the sights. I want to be seeing all the sparkling restaurants and, the people. And it was just such a vivid feeling. And then there was this inner tension of, but I should be praying. And then I was kind of trying to, like we do, I was trying to argue with myself. Well, you can pray with your eyes open, or you can just thank God for all the things you see. And this part of me was like, no, you know, it's just, and it really was, Heather, it's like a little 8-year-old part of me, a young girl, you know, you kind of can imagine a stubborn little kid just being like, I don't want to do this right now. You know, and I'm like, what is this about? And so I had to practice with myself the what I teach other people as a therapist. I know this works. I kind of knew what to do, but I had to practice getting curious. What is this? What is this about? And So I kind of just share about this inner dialogue that I have with this younger version of me that, ironically, spoiler alert, these parts of us tend to surface when there's actual safety. Just like our kids, you know, sometimes when our kids misbehave the most or they punch at us, it's because they actually know they're safe to be real, right? So this is the paradox. It's the truth inside your own inner world too. The minute you start acting out is often a moment that a part of you feels safe enough to finally say something, and it's a bid for connection and healing. So I was able to kind of do that work on the prayer walk.
And I think it's just throughout the book, you're just really honest, and it feels like someone's saying out loud thoughts that have gone through my brain at different points. And I love that you make it accessible, like, oh, I don't have to feel bad that I've had these thoughts, like that I've gone through that process, that I don't want to pray. And you don't even pathologize loneliness. Instead, you say it's your soul reaching out for love. And that feels more hopeful. Like we've been told, like, oh, we're in this loneliness crisis and everything's terrible. And and yet, like, can you kind of describe that difference between loneliness and this deeper spiritual disconnection that you're describing in your book?
Yeah, I love that you named that culturally, because it's a giant cultural scream for something beautiful, something we were designed for, right? Like loneliness, as painful as it is to feel, and as someone who I would use that word to characterize, and it's kind of what comes through in the book, kind of a chronic loneliness my whole life, even when I had a lot of friends and a lot of people around me, and I have a nice family, you know, growing up, but there's still just a loneliness. And to recognize that as a bid, it's something in my soul longing for something good, longing for something true. And that reframe kind of changes everything for us. Instead of this is a problem to be fixed, it's what is it telling us? Mm-hmm. What are we aching for? Yeah. And I also think for me, it was so important to recognize that that longing might not always be fixed by another person. And that's sort of the trajectory I go on in the book, that there's a spiritual component to it. And there's this famous psychotherapist who talks about how, and this isn't very culturally trendy and maybe not something we want to hear, but basically he talks about the fact that all of us wrestle with this sort of existential reality of loneliness on some level. And the way he defines it, I think, is so powerful, that there's no one human being that will ever fully inhabit my inner life.
Yeah.
I have a wonderful husband, you know, there's some part of me that will always feel, but I can see those parts of me and God can see those parts of me. And that's what I really wanted to focus on, is that we can spiritually go deeper and deeper into that sense of that inner love. You know, Henry Nouwen talks about that inner voice of love, that inner love that really comes from the inside out, and it's the spiritual life. And we don't talk about it a lot, you know, in our culture.
I've had a lot of episodes on attachment and attachment theory, and there can be pressure on parents, and we'll get to that a little bit more.
Yes.
Of just like, okay, I've got to get this, I've got to be a safe person that my kids can turn to. And if I mess it up, they're going to have attachment issues. And I have attachment issues because my parents messed it up. And what I love, and I took a screenshot, so hopefully I can find it on my phone quickly. But it was basically that it seems not enough to encapsulate all of attachment in a human source. Like,
exactly.
Humans create it, humans repair it. It's all on humans. And that there could be a divine source of the original attachment and divine source of healing. Talk to us about that, like where you came to that conclusion in your work.
That was a big reason I wrote the book, is number one, recognizing my own attachment wounds. And on the bell-shaped curve, I have very loving parents. My parents did a great job. They're not perfect, but they did a great job.
Yeah.
And I still came up at adulthood with a fair amount of attachment wounds. So right there, there's sort of like, what's that about? Number two, kind of seeing culturally what's happening with this pressure that I think my generation and the moms listening who are younger than me kind of like, oh, golly, we can't do this to our kids. We have to be so perfectly present. And it's so much pressure. And just my own journey, again, not to underestimate the profound influence of a relationship, of a parent. It is so important. And also, it is not the ultimate source. It is not. God is the ultimate source of connection. It's God is the source underlying all of our connections. God is the source that we can, you know, I think of it as a river. You know, it's like when you and I are, there's a river of love that can, I can tap into even when the best friend or the best spouse or the best parent can't quite get me. That river is still flowing right there that I can tap into, you can tap into. And that's what allows us to stay in connection to each other. And so that's what I really wanted to highlight is that idea of God. I talk about, I went back and forth on this, but it's both God has given me as a self the capacity to know myself to some degree. So I'm a huge part of that, that I can know the parts of me, but I'm not a single parent to my soul. That God is that, you know, it's me coming, God, I see this loneliness and God coming in with me. And there's like two of us looking at this soul and parenting it. And that there's so much intimacy in that. And then that spills over. Gosh, it makes my relationships with my kids, my spouse, my parents so much healthier because it right sizes my expectations of all of them.
This episode is brought to you thanks to sponsors like Our Place. Okay, what I love about Our Place, all of their products, is that they are going to be non-toxic. And in our family, our microwave died years ago, and we never replaced it for lots of reasons. But one is we just found that an air fryer is a better option. And then our air fryer broke. And so I ended up getting an Our Place Wonder Oven Pro. Imagine it's like a very upgraded, super cute looking toaster oven plus air fryer. It is so perfect because it's kind of like an 8-in-1. So I put it right in that spot above our oven where our microwave used to be. And it preheats 60% faster than a traditional oven. It cooks 40% faster. So when I'm dealing with hungry boys, and this summer it was like everybody was eating at all times a day, it makes my job so much simpler. In fact, it's great because they can use it, whether they are reheating leftovers or they're wanting to make a quick meal from our frozen stuff, like frozen chicken nuggets. They taste amazing. It crisps them up. And it's great if you want to cook something you don't want to turn on the whole oven, like it's ridiculously hot in Texas and maybe you don't want to heat up the whole house. So if you are looking for a great option, I would definitely check out the Wonder Oven Pro. Also check out Our Place's other products like their Titanium Pro cookware, their cookware sets, their Always Pan. I forgot to mention, with the Wonder Oven Pro, it came with three different things you can put into it, whether it's the bake sheet, whether it's the air fryer basket, or whether it's just the wire shelf that you would normally have in an oven. So many options. Upgrade your kitchen with Our Place today. Visit fromourplace.com/DMA. Use the code DMA for 10% off site-wide. That's fromourplace.com/DMA. Use the code DMA for 10% off site-wide. With a 100-day trial, you can try it completely risk-free. It's so good because people come to me I just recently posted on friendship and someone's like, you know, you're saying to be needy, but when I am, people don't show up. And I'm thinking, have you done the work to figure out how much are you expecting of people? Are you over expecting of people something they were never meant to fill? And I think, you know, another thing you talk about, and this really resonated with me, is when you're in those groups and you start telling yourself the phrase, I don't belong here, that whole rejection messaging, like we talked about loneliness, but there can also be like real pain that can happen, whether intentional or unintentional, in groups that then the default, and I remember learning this with kids and boys especially, is shame and blame that we go to, and like the messages of what's wrong with me that this is hard. what's wrong with them? And then if we're talking spiritually, what does this mean about God? Like, so you're experiencing rejection or loneliness or anxiety or whatever in a social situation. So with other people.
Yeah.
That internal messaging, which I think you do such a good job of naming and exploring, and then, like you just said, co-parenting those inner voices with God to do the work instead of going to blame and shame.
Yeah.
So talk to us about those default responses and when we're hearing those messages.
Yeah. I tell the story in the book of being at a Christian women's conference and feeling like I don't belong and just almost caving in on myself. And you're exactly right. The first instinct is to be like, there's something wrong with them. But I was like, I don't really think there is. I don't think anyone outside of me is doing anything wrong. So then there's something wrong with me. I'm just not good enough. I don't think that's true. You know, like my wiser, there's enough wise self kind of going, I don't think that's true either. I don't think God hates me. So what is this? And I tell the story of I actually went to sit by myself, and it was such a profound moment for me. I've done this work for a number of years, so I have a little bit, but I just thought I need to be with myself here and not rush to they're the problem or I'm the problem. And what I connected with was a young teenage, you know, in the book, definitely I tell story after story of feeling like I don't belong, feeling rejected, you know, so it is very transparent, but it is sort of that narrative. But being with that young, because we all have these younger versions of ourselves who live within us, right? For me, the 13-year-old who was sidelined and never made the team, right? Or in that instance, you know, just kind of those different narratives that still live in my memory of feeling like I didn't belong when I went off to college, you know, and kind of just sitting with those younger girls who are the young girl who's still within me, you know, and who still flares up, and just all she needed in that moment was me to go, I get it. This is hard. Sometimes it's hard for me, for my soul in a big unknown setting. I'm not that person who immediately clicks in. And maybe what I need right now is just to be with myself in that. And it's not somebody else's fault, and it's not my fault. And gosh, suddenly, you know, I talk about how I was feeling so awkward, like I wore the wrong clothes, I have the wrong bag. I'm like, and then suddenly I just kind of feel right-sized in my own body. This is okay. I can be here. I can feel on the fringe, and I can be with myself in that. Nothing has changed outside of me, but I've changed. And those kinds of moments have changed me, you know, when I'm in rooms like that. It doesn't change necessarily anything outside of me. Now, sometimes you might have one of those moments and you're kind of with yourself and you realize, I think those people outside are being mean to me. Yeah. And maybe I have a story of girls being mean to me. You know, maybe your listener has a story of where she was bullied quite a bit. And now she's in a setting where that's resurrecting and nobody ever stepped in. No parent ever stepped in and said, you know, let me be with you in that. And also let me help you figure out how to advocate for yourself or how to do something for yourself. And sometimes that's what we need to do. But it starts with being with ourselves to recognize what is actually happening here and what is the actual need here before rushing to shame or blame.
I've told you I'm a lot more familiar with internal family system language, like the parts of me, if y'all want to go look up Schwartz, right? Would he be the go-to guy? What's the book? You Are the One You've Been Waiting For was a great book of like describing this concept. Yeah. But then the spiritual side of it, I think in Christian realms, and I even heard some podcaster, I will not mention her name, talk about you don't have an inner child. That's ridiculous. Yeah. I thought, oh my goodness, when we shut down these ideas, we shut down God's ability to heal. Because the amount of people I've prayed with in a vivid memory from their childhood comes to mind, and Jesus comes in and heals it, and it no longer has power over their life. I'm like, that was so real, and that was so spirit-filled, and I cannot deny that that was true.
Yeah.
So why would we not pay attention? It seems like you're kind of saying, let's be aware of actually what's going on. I'm feeling anxiety. I'm feeling loneliness. I'm feeling rejection. I'm feeling like I don't belong here. Like you use the word curious. Can I get curious and see, is there a part of my story or is there a part of me that's trying to communicate a message? Yeah. And you introduced this concept of a soul rupture.
Yeah.
And if we don't pay attention to it, how it can just get deeper and deeper. What is a soul rupture and why don't we often recognize them right away?
Yeah, there's places in our soul. The soul, you think about the body, and if you broke your arm and it never got set, and you arrived at adulthood, this happened to a family member of mine, the broken arm never got set, arrived at adulthood at 30, and his arm doesn't work right.
Oh, right? Shoot.
That's a real thing. It's no different in our soul. If something gets hurt or torn and it isn't set or healed, it lives with us in adult. This is just science. And I talk a little bit in the book about the science of memory. We have these core memories. And so often those core memories, they're lit up in our brains. This is neurobiology for a reason, because the brain takes a snapshot when something painful happens.
It's right? Like Inside Out. Go watch the movie Inside Out. Then you got right there.
This is the way God designed the neurobiology of the body and the soul, is that when something gets hurt, it stays hurt until there's healing. And all of this can be misused and misapplied. So of course, there's that caveat, of course. But when you have a memory, and for years, I had this memory of not making the basketball team. And I tell the story in the book, but when I was, I think, 13 or 14, middle school. And I always, you know, for years, I'm like, that's just stupid. Dismiss it. And finally, that memory really sticks with me. You know, there's a reason for that. Something happened there that tore something inside of me. Yeah. And I picked up some belief about myself that I'm not good enough, that I'll always be on the sidelines. Well, I can like it or not like it. It's there. There's a soul rupture. And my work now is to notice that soul rupture. It's harder with the soul because we can't see it. I can't go to a doctor and see the bruise here. You know, but I know it's there because I know that I still have that reaction today if I don't make something like, you know, an extreme reaction to it. And so that's the beginning of healing. That soul rupture isn't, it's kind of like the loneliness. There's a loneliness wound there. And that's not the beginning of, that's the beginning of healing. That's the good news. That's a bid. Those soul ruptures are bids from our soul saying, I need attention here. And they belong to younger versions of ourselves. You can get as woo-woo or not as you want with that. You know, we can get scientific about that. Or we can say, that's an 8-year-old girl who still lives inside of me who needs care.
Well, and you just mentioned a few times, but I want to talk about it specifically, this bids for connection. Because I've heard it in the context of relationship. Let's say a kid walks in and says, hey, mom, look at my drawing. That's their bid for a connection. And you can respond to with, sorry, I'm working right now. Or you can be like, oh my gosh, it's amazing. I love the color that you used for the butterfly, whatever. So then you have connection because you've responded to their bid. But you use it in such a unique way, talking about our internal bids for connection.
Yeah.
Tell me more about that, like when it relates to our emotions and what you were just saying about the soul ruptures, like the smoke that's letting us know something else is going on.
Exactly. Right? Yes, it's exactly. I learned the idea from the Gottman's research on marriage, just as you're saying, and they apply in parenting when our kids are bidding for connection, but our soul does it too. Mm. And our soul says, I'm hurting. I'm not, you know, when I'm standing at that women's conference, it wasn't just an idle, oh, I feel uncomfortable. It was like a part of me collapsing. That's a bid. That's like a child coming home from school with their face downcast and they're out of character. And you as a parent are like, something's not right. Something happened here, right? We read the subtext with our kids. That's a part of attachment, that present. That's what our soul's doing. That part of me kind of collapsed inside. I felt dismayed. Normally, I try to fake it, talk myself out of it, just get yourself in line, pretend. Is that what we would do to a child?
Yeah.
You know, who showed up with a face downcast, like I don't want to go to school today. No, we'd sit with our young one. That's the same with our soul. That soul's making a bid going. So for me, again, it gets at this idea that we're complex. God made us complex. We are different than other animals, that I can observe myself. That's part of this IFS. I can observe myself. I can differentiate just enough from that downcast part of me, that collapsed part of me, to say, something's happening here. I see that. It's not all of me, but some part of me. And instead of forcing myself to fake it till I make it or shaming myself, I can be with myself, that part of myself, in a different way. And that requires us to understand that a lot of us weren't taught that we do have that ability to observe ourselves. We can be a parent to our own souls. We see it in the scriptures. We see David talking about how I've weaned my soul like a child. I've weaned my soul, right? We can parent our souls. And we don't learn this very much, but that's a big passion of mine. All the work I do is we can be with these parts of ourselves just as we learn to be with our own children. And in fact, they correlate dramatically because we realize part of how I learned this work was realizing I would never say to my daughter what I am saying to myself right now.
Yeah. And I think that's an important thing. If you've been in the Christian world a long time and you shut it down, like, oh no, that's too self-focused. Like some people be like, oh, spending all that time with yourself, that's too self-focused. And just read another verse and tell yourself truth instead of getting curious and listening. You say the phrase, presence heals more than explanation. Mm. Like having more and more people tell you about it. Talk to us about that. Like, and also address the whole self-focus. Like if someone's like, oh, that's too self-focused.
Yeah, I think the difference between, you know, I think actually this work makes us less selfish because in that there's an honesty in it. So there's that honesty of that moment of something is happening here. That's real. That's telling the truth. When we tell the truth, we open up for healing. God's presence comes in. And then there's that honest, that kind of being with ourself that is self-awareness, which is the difference from self-focus. Mm. Self-awareness is how God designed us to be. Self-awareness is where I say, oh, this is what's happening to me right now. That actually leads to greater intimacy with others, greater other focus, because there are two people in any relationship. There's me and the other person. And if I can't do the work of being self-aware, if I can't be aware of my own patterns and say, oh, I'm shutting down right now, that's an essential ingredient to being able to be in a healthy relationship with another human, right? And so self-awareness isn't self-focus. It requires self-reflection. It requires self-noticing, right? But I don't do that to stay there. I do that to become aware so that I can invite God in, so that then I'm more integrated, so that I can go back out and then either have the hard conversation from a much healthier place, or I can set a boundary because I'm recognizing this isn't a healthy place for me, right? That self-awareness is what allows us to operate in a healthier way in the world. I always think, you know, this is just where I always come in, is Jesus said, love God, love others as yourself. We're not taking away God and we're not taking away others. We're really highlighting the as yourself part in this book, you know, in my work. We have to understand ourselves in order to be healthy with others.
And you have this great rhythm, which you share in the book, of recognize and return.
Yeah.
Talk to us about that. This kind of – the recognize is what you were just saying, that self-awareness, that paying attention, that asking the questions, and then return. Kind of talk to us about that.
Yeah, I kind of realized a lot of what I'm doing is boiling it down to recognize the pattern, recognize I'm shutting down, recognize I'm anxious, recognize I'm lonely, and then the return – is to that inner voice of love. The return is to, I am loved even here. I am loved right here in the loneliness. I am loved right here as I'm shutting down. I don't have to fix it. I don't have to get someone else to fix it. I am loved right here. And that return is what changes everything. It gives us that safety. Return is the attachment, right? I can reconnect to God and to myself right here. Before I do anything else, I'm going back to home base. I'm going back to safety right here. I'm loved even here. I practice this all the time, no matter what I'm feeling, how awful it is. I am loved even here. It's that return to home base. It's the return to secure attachment. And it's available through the power of God's love right in this moment, right? And from that secure base, what we know from attachment theory, I can then go out and be brave in the world around me.
And that's the other's piece. That's right. Your relationships. I'm grateful for sponsors who make this show possible, like Oak Essentials. Y'all, I am not someone who's good about putting on body lotion, but I know I'm of the age that I should make it part of my routine. Well, when the Luminous body lotion arrived from Oak Essentials, I'm telling you, I opened it right away. And first of all, amazing, gorgeous glass bottle. Second of all, it's this beautiful blue color from the Blue Tansy, which is an antioxidant botanical that supports your skin's moisture. Then it was the smell. I'm telling you, I don't even need perfume on when I use this lotion. It's like a clean, subtle, totally reminds me of being at the spa, which I don't get to do very often. But if you want to pretend like you go to the spa, this Luminous body lotion, it's like a velvety soft finish. It feels amazing. I'm telling you, I can't say spa enough because that is the first thing that came to mind. So Oak Essentials was founded by Jenny Kane. And if you know her world, you know the aesthetic. It's this effortless, elevated, nothing extra. It has rose oil and shea butter and coconut oil and turmeric root. So it is deeply hydrating and nourishing the skin, but also firming it to support like a youthful looking complexion. They have a travel size you can throw in your bag. I have also been checking out their other products like their moisture rich balm, which is you just need like a pea size amount and it is amazing. It makes your skin feel so good. If you're not sure where to start, Oak Essentials has a skincare quiz that can give you personalized recommendations based on your skin concerns. So the Luminous body lotion has sold out multiple times, and once you try it, you're going to understand why. Head to oakessentials.com and use the code DMA to get 15% off your first order at checkout. That's 15% off your order at oakessentials.com with the promo code DMA. After you purchase, they're going to ask where you heard about us. Please support the show and let them know that we sent you. This show is made possible thanks to sponsors like Lola Blankets, y'all. I shared my Lola Blanket on Instagram, and y'all went cuckoo ca-choo because I think a lot of people have seen them and wonder, are they as soft as everyone says? I'm going to tell you, I have bought so many blankets over the years. In fact, the favorite thing I sleep with every night is my blankie. So I'm a blanket connoisseur. And when I tell you that the Lola blanket is the absolute softest one I've ever felt, I'm not lying. Unless somebody's got one out there and they haven't presented it to me, it is the softest one in our home. It is fought over. I actually have to protect it from the stinky boys. I have the large and it is definitely big enough for a couple. They have an extra large and I can't even imagine how massive it is. A friend of mine said she actually has bought the baby size and uses it on an airplane, which I think is such a brilliant idea. Would be make a great gift for like a new young professional. Or if you're looking for a wedding gift idea, I think a Lola blanket is so perfect for a couple to cozy up on the couch together. Adorable. They have so many different colors. They have collab with so many people that they have amazing options for you, designers, limited edition colors. I have the light pink color that I love. They also have weighted blankets if you need a calming therapeutic vibe and matching pillows. For a limited time, hear me, our listeners can get 40% off select Lola blanket products with code DMA at checkout. Just go to Lola Blankets, L-O-L-A Blankets.com and use that code DMA to get 40% off your order. After you purchase, they're going to say, where did you hear about us? Please support our show and let them know we sent you. Wrap yourself in luxury with Lola Blankets. So like, as I was thinking about it, I was thinking about different scenarios for me. Let's say it's summer. By the time this comes out, it'll be end of summer. Everyone's really officially done with kids being home and the lack of structure. But you're overwhelmed and you're feeling it inside your body. You're feeling like, I need everyone to just leave me alone. I don't want anyone else to need me. I need no more phone calls, no more texts. That overwhelm. Mm-hmm. So imagine I'm feeling that. What would be my next step? Recognize?
Yes. So this happened to me just the other night. I'm so overwhelmed. It's summer, all the things. And I snapped at my husband.
Yeah.
And the difference is, right? So the recognize is I walked away and I recognize I am overwhelmed. I am chaotic. I'm not thinking straight. And I will immediately kind of put my hand on my heart just for a physical. I am loved. Deep breath, even here. There's no shame. It happens. Right? It can be walking into a bathroom. Your kids are making you crazy. I want to scream at my kids. I am loved, even here. Just that deep breath, something physical, walking into a different room. Give yourself a beat. Hand on heart, deep breath. It doesn't have to be long. I am loved even here. All that does is it settles your nervous system just a little bit. You return to home base. You get a little more of that wise self. Almost immediately the other night, I was able to then walk back into the room and say, I'm sorry. I'm overwhelmed. Right. So that was the full loop. And it's that simple. What could have been 3 days, you know, was just a simple, but just giving yourself in the throes of, I am worn out. I can't wait for my kids to leave. Recognize that I am loved even here, even in that place. And that is wild for parts of us. Parts of us will be like, no, I'm not that. I am a terrible mom. Mm. You know what? I am loved even there. You are loved even there. That part of you that thinks you're a terrible mom, even she is precious to God right now. You know, you just start to train each of these parts of you. And it almost reminds me of kids being like, my husband tells the story as a little boy, he would go to his dad and be like, would you sell me for this amount of money? Would you sell me for this amount of money? Would you sell me for the, you know, kind of like testing his love. And it's almost like we're going, even this part of me? Even this part of me? God, no way. It's like what we're doing with God. And God's just, even there. That's the secure base. And I'm not telling people to stay there. I'm saying that's the return to our belovedness no matter what.
And it's not this, like I'm imagining, okay, let's say my thing is I feel guilt or shame about the need to, that I, the withdrawal response. Is a response that I can go to. And I can feel guilt or shame about that. Like, what's wrong with me that I need to withdraw? It's not that I need to sit for hours and like find a part of me or like a child that part of me and we need to talk about it. But I need to communicate to myself like, that's you love that? God loves that part about you. Like, that's not something you need to blame or feel guilt or shame about. It's that piece is even loved.
Yeah, we're rewiring our inner narratives. And this takes practice. I believe this is a spiritual discipline, a spiritual formation, a practice. Some people need therapy because parts of us have been so wounded that I've been to therapy. I need someone else in the room with me. Over time, it becomes it's part of my daily rhythm. But when I'm just withdrawing into a bag of chips and Netflix maybe my fourth glass of wine, whatever it is, we're not trying to, it's very different from saying, this is fine, I'm good, this is fine. It's saying, if we can find that paper's width distance from the behavior, which is maybe not fine, you know, maybe not great, maybe I shouldn't be doing it, but it's instead of, let me put it this way, we do not change in the context of shame or criticism. It does not help. So to sit there and beat myself up for this thing I should not be doing will not change the behavior. It adds pressure, which increases the probability that we'll do it again. Yeah. It doesn't work. So what we're trying to do when we notice, again, even just being able to notice, oh my gosh, I am drinking I'm drinking another glass of wine, or I cannot stop. That moment, a paper's width notice of noticing, I can't even stop myself, but I'm going to notice it. And just that little bit of a return of, God, meet me even here. I can't stop, but meet me even here. That's a beginning of a rewiring of, because we will change in the context of compassion. We will. And you imagine your kid doing something they shouldn't be doing. We see this with our kids. You imagine your kid, if you go in and start lecturing and beating your finger, you know, there's a point to which that works. But when you sit with them and go, I see what you're doing. And there's that full body. I don't want you to be doing this. And I still love you. And I don't want you to be doing this. This is the containment piece. That's what we're kind of trying to do with ourselves. It's always from love. It may be, I don't want to be doing this, but I'm loved even here, right? It is a full body rewiring of basing ourselves from love. It's what we're trying to learn to do with our kids. And it's not without, I always talk about containment in the book. Just as there are boundaries in love, there's containment with ourselves, but it's always from a place of love. That's how we change.
And containment, define that for people that may not know.
Yeah, the three C's of attachment, as I boil them down, are curiosity, compassion, and containment. And containment is that holding place, right? It's that holding place. And the best way to think about it is your kid's throwing a temper tantrum, and they're in the tantrum. You can't stop the tantrum, but you can hold that space for them. You can be with them. I think of my daughter. You know, I tell the story in the book. My kids lost their biological mom when they were very young to a terminal illness, and there's a lot of grief there. And I came in a couple years later. You know, I think of that physicalization of that grief and that anger, kind of beating the fists, right? And that holding space is the containment. I'm with you in this. You know what happens when we do that for our kids? They calm down. Mm-hmm. It moves through. The emotion moves through. They come back online. And then we can be with them and sit with them and talk and plan and, you know, strategize and problem solve. But we've moved the emotion through. That's what we're trying to do with ourselves. We're letting ourselves have a little temper tantrum inside. I want to eat these chips. You know, that's what'll happen to me. I'm doing it. Okay. I'm going to be with you. You're going to do, you know, I don't love it, but I'm also going to be with you because then I'm going to build trust with that part of me that next time it might be like, maybe we could have a conversation first. So it's really attachment applied to our inner world.
When I think about with our small group, we share feelings, everybody sits, and then you say what you need from the group. And a lot of times people choose containment because it feels good to say out loud the thing that has been circling your head and to have other people hear it and stay in the room.
Yes.
And so if we can do that with our souls, like say it out loud, scream the thing, throw the tantrum, and know that we are secure and loved by God and it's not too much for Him, that we are contained in that love. That's that security. And I think it's the ultimate connection we're longing for, which takes us all the way back to the beginning, right, of our conversation with that loneliness and that disconnect. It's like a mom right now, moms in general, the amount of energy that she puts towards herself or paying attention to herself or having compassion for herself is so little.
I mean, you and I
are both moms, but like,
I know.
I can see how little I put on paying attention to what was going on in me, whether it was dysregulation or past pain or whatever. Yeah. I was just so focused on kids, making sure their needs were met, making sure they felt loved, and then the litany of things that good moms do.
Yeah.
If a mom is listening, she is on empty.
Yeah.
How does she even, like, what's the first step of even recognizing that she's disconnected?
Yeah, well, that feeling of being on empty, that feeling of overwhelm, that feeling of I cannot take one more thing. And here's the good news. It'll sound like bad news, but it's good news. I say this to my moms all the time. I'm an empty nester now, so it's hard when you're in the throes with all the kids. But here's the good news is the good and bad news. You actually have, in addition to however many kids you actually have a responsibility to parent these little kids within you. The fact that you have a little girl within you who also needs parenting is just true. It's just true. And she also needs you. Now, I know that can sound like pressure, but if you can look at it that way and you can get a moment to, instead of fighting that, being like, I just have to get it together to be there for them, oh my gosh, this overwhelm, this rage, this resentment, this envy, whatever it is, that's my own little girl needing me. I need to make time for her. I got to give her a half an hour this week. I got to get her to the ocean. Your own kids will benefit and your whole life will benefit. So just, doesn't have to be a lot, but she needs a little. She needs a little. And that's how she'll show up, is through all those negative emotions. Just create a little space for her. Take her on a date once a week, your own little girl. Take her to the movies by yourself. One little thing. It doesn't have to be a lot of time, but she does need something.
Is it true? I've said this maybe in another podcast, and I've been waiting for a psychologist or someone to tell me that it's true or not. I heard one time that when you turn around 35, there's something in your brain that thins and like memories from your past, like those core memories start coming to the surface more. Mm. And I'm curious, in the past, people would have kids much younger. You would pretty much have grown adult children by the time you hit 35. Now we've like pushed it back. So we're in the throes of parenting and hitting 35. And all those core memories are coming up as we're parenting. Anyway, is it a made up thing or is that like real?
I have not heard that. That actually makes a lot of sense to me because it is true in your 30s is when you kind of start reflecting back. Mm-hmm. And that's I think that's a really valid point. And yet we're also doing that while we have our own kids in the home. And again, if that's your reality, the best, don't fight it because it won't go away. But also it's not that you have to do full-time work on yourself, full-time work on your kids. Just think of it as one more child. You have one more child and it's your inner child. It's your own little 8-year-old who also does need you at least a little bit.
Some people are like, I remember, who was I with? It was 4th of July and her child saw us taking a family picture and he's like, are they all her kids? Like, I have four boys. They have three in their family, but one more felt like a lot more to him.
It's a lot. And so you saying it's good news.
Just one more is a lot for some people, like 4 to 5,
it's
3 to 4. That feels like a big deal.
But she matters. She's precious.
Yeah. And then have you noticed when you've worked with people on this and you've written this book and you've probably done it in yourself, like what changes in our parenting? Give us some motivation when we begin living from that secure soul. Like that's the goal. We read this book, we do the work. We're living from the secure soul. What changes?
Yeah, we're able to – the best way to say it is it's not that we don't still have all the emotions. We don't feel overwhelmed. But instead of speaking from the overwhelm, instead of speaking from the frustration, instead of speaking from the anger, we speak on behalf of ourselves, right? So if I'm aware that I'm feeling really annoyed with my kids, if I'm aware of that – it's so different for me that if I'm speaking from it, I'm snipping at them, I'm snamming at them, I'm impatient. If I'm aware, oh yes, this part of me is real frustrated with my kids, I can speak on behalf and it sounds more like, kids, mom's at her end. Mom needs a mommy timeout for half an hour. And you can say it from a much better place. And so I think that just that layer of our own sense of ourself allows us to speak on behalf of ourselves versus from that space.
Reacting and responding.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, sadly, our time is closing up and I would do a whole nother hour with you. But you also wrote this beautiful sentence. I'm going to read it back to you. The secure soul isn't reserved for a few. It's the calling of every human heart. And I know people listening, maybe they've never even considered a lot of the things we talked about today, and they're maybe recognizing that they're disconnected from themselves, from other people, even from God. What do you hope, either from this conversation, from reading the book, maybe, that she hears?
That your soul is worth tending to. Mm-hmm. I know you tend a lot of other people's souls, and your soul is also worth tending because that young one who lives in you also needs love.
So good. Y'all, you can find so much more from Dr. Allison. She has multiple books, Boundaries for Your Soul, I Shouldn't Feel This Way, The Best of You, and two podcasts. Is that right? You have two podcasts?
Yes. We started a daily devotional podcast, which has been very popular with my moms because it's just 8 minutes.
That's amazing.
And it's sort of scripture seen through the lens of attachment.
I love that. So if y'all need a daily dose of goodness, go to the Best of You Every Day podcast. All of these links are in the show notes, but I really appreciate you taking time with me today so much and for writing this beautiful book.
Thank you, Heather. It's so good to be here. I appreciate you so much.
Of course. Such an enlightening conversation, something that maybe you hadn't considered before. I know we've done lots of episodes on attachment, which I mentioned, and they are linked in the show notes, but I am so encouraged to know that it is our attachment to God and the security we find there that can heal so much in our soul if we allow and give ourselves the time and the attention to do that. So I'm going to pray for us. Lord, I know you made us. You made us to be bodies with souls. And then you gave us the gift through your Son who died on the cross and rose again to have access to the Holy Spirit, which means your presence in us, which means we can allow our souls, which can get beat up by the world and by circumstances and by choices and by wounding, that you can have access through your Spirit to heal us, to remind us of what's true, that you are present, that you aren't going anywhere, and most importantly, that we are loved by you, the God of the universe, the God who knows the tiniest particles to the largest aspects of the infinite universe, and you care about us, and not just care, you love us. For the mom who's listening, Lord, I pray that in this moment, supernaturally, she would feel your incredible, present love right now when she's just sitting here listening, not because of what she's doing or any kind of performance or any kind of service or any kind of perfection, but just her existing is enough for your love and your security. And may we really let that settle in and absorb it so that we can move forward as people empowered by you to represent you to a world that so desperately needs to know this kind of hope and healing and love. I thank you and praise you for all that you're doing in each of our lives. I pray for any women who are walking through hard things right now. I know that the world can be messy, and this stage of parenting can be hard. Any stage of parenting can be hard. Be our guide. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks, y'all, for joining me. Next week, we have another doctor in the house. Dr. Jim Burns is going to join us and talk about his new book, which is focused on the rising number of children and parents who are estranged, and focusing more on what parents, their role. And if you are a child who is estranged from your parents, I hope you would join us as well, because I think it is a hopeful conversation. So meet me back here next week. If you're not subscribed, go ahead and subscribe. That way the episode just pops right into your library and you won't miss a thing. All right. See y'all soon. Bye.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Don't Mom Alone podcast. If you're wanting to connect with more people and more resources to help remind you that you're not alone, head over to don'tmomalone.com. That's where you'll also find show notes with any links mentioned by our guests. Most importantly, I want you to know the good news, the great news that you're not alone, because God has promised to always be with you. With faith in Jesus Christ, the one who died for you and rose again, Jesus said when he left, he was going to leave a helper, a comforter, to be with us. God in us. Moms, that's superpower. So while you're washing dishes at your kitchen sink, while you're driving to and from work, while you're feeding that baby late into the night, while you're cleaning sticky floors, God promises to be just as present with you as when you're worshiping in a church pew. As it says in Zephaniah 3:17, the Lord your God is with you. He is mighty to save. He takes great delight in you. He will quiet you with his love, and he will rejoice over you with singing. Now that's good news. Have a great day.